Get sweet deals at True North convenience stores when you join True Rewards. Save a dollar when you buy any two king or standard size candy bars. Get more Kit Kat Crunch, Milky Way Caramel, and more peanut M&Ms. Choose any of your chocolate favorites when you grab two king or standard size candy bars and save $1. Become a True Rewards member today and save on so much more. Download from the Apple app or Google Play Store for more details. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
We weren't hip hop. We weren't pop music. We were just like, cool. We were club kids. We're making our little beats. We didn't think it would really. So it wasn't about that. It was like, hey, man, can I make a living doing this thing?
Yeah.
Listen, when I first moved to LA, it was still, like I said, I was still like, oh, maybe my thing will be I'm producing for other people. Yeah. Or, you know, I didn't know how it was going to unfold.
How big it would end up getting. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? So, and even now, look, these guys that have come after me, like the John Summits and like, you know, Calvin Harris, you know, he's probably one iteration after me. And just where they've been able to take it, it still just blows my mind. And part of me, it's just like, yeah, because it's kind of like, those are my people. This is the sound.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the I Am Studios in the heart of Los Angeles. And let's just cut to the chase. Today's guest is a worldwide phenomenon. We are talking to Cascade, the man who was the first electronic artist to DJ throughout a Super Bowl. I'm only bringing that up because the Super Bowl was recent.
Yep.
First electronic act to sell out big venues from Staples Center to the Coliseum. The seven-time Grammy nominee. And perhaps most importantly and most personal for me, the guy who pioneered the DJ residency in Las Vegas during the peak of my partying era, which actually leaked into a very personal and bonding experience to my wife. He was the star of our private raves that I used to have with my wife. So this is an exciting moment for me. And maybe most importantly for the show, this is a Los Angeles resident that is a transplant, if I may.
Yes.
That has become part of the fabric of this city and loves the city of Los Angeles. Perhaps as much as I do, which is
I love this place, dude. You've helped me love it more.
Well, thank you for saying that. Cascade, listen, first and foremost, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Really appreciate you being here. This is a big moment for me, big moment for the show. So we're excited.
Stoked to be here.
So thank you. But yeah, I got to say, Cascade, first, if I may pat myself on the back, you have been phenomenal for me for liking my posts, commenting on my posts, and actually interacting with me through DM, which I, you know, is a big deal for me. And I'm really honored for that. So I want to thank you for that. But so welcome to the show and welcome to the I Am Studios. Before we get started, we got to thank today's sponsor, Arto Brick, third generation LA American Dream Story, manufacturing tiles and bricks down in Gardena. They say manufacturing can't be done in Los Angeles. Tell that to my man Armin of Arto Brick, employing dozens of people, making historical and significant brick and tile. We're talking Olvera Street, Mariachi Plaza, USC, La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, Ojai Valley Inn, Vallarta. The list goes on and on, handcrafted right here in Los Angeles. So thank you. If you have any architecture, interior design needs, Arto Brick is the place to be. So Cascade, welcome. And the first thing I want to ask you is, why Los Angeles? You are a world traveler, shows in every continent, so many cities. You're not born here, but you've lived in so many places. Why Los Angeles to settle, dude, and live your life?
I love that you're getting right into the heart of the matter.
Let's go.
Love this.
Let's get into it.
This is good because I want to flex LA. I love LA so much. I have loved living here. Every time I land from wherever, dude, I
You know, I just landed from Sydney and I'm like, there is nothing like Los Angeles. Yes. This place is so insanely unique and I wouldn't live anywhere else. I don't know. Like you said, I've traveled all over the world. I've played shows in over 70 countries. And there's some great cities out there. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I love it. You know, diverse, cool, interesting places. But to me, and maybe it's because I grew up in suburban Chicago, you know, born and raised there. And for us as kids, my parents were, a big deal was to go to the beach. And if you live in the Midwest, most of us, we would travel down to Florida. That was kind of the thing. Then like somewhere in the mid 80s, it became reasonable or cheap enough to go down to Mexico. So we started going to Mexico for winter break. So the beach to me was like this dream kind of cool thing. And kind of couple that with like 80s pop culture, Tony Hawk, skateboarding, all that was kind of coming out of California, Vans, right? Like all these things that you just think of California. I'm this kid in, you know, Chicago, just like getting Thrasher and just like, I loved skating. I grew up skateboarding. I just was like California. It was just like this dream place. I don't know. So when we came out west and we had some cousins that lived here and anytime we visited, it was just, oh, it's a cool place. And I don't know how it all came together that I landed here. I think a lot of my industry was based here.
Right.
I was in San Francisco for almost 10 years and I loved San Francisco. I thought it was a great city, but every
time. You were there at a good time too, right?
Oh my
gosh. Turn of the 21st century, right?
Dude, that tech boom.
Yeah.
We were right in it. Tech was exploding. Art was exploding. Music was just, the city was just heaving. So it's kind of a fascinating time to be there. But I kept coming down to LA for work and I was, at that time in my career, I wasn't like Cascade, like this big guy. Was still, house music was still like this very niche thing. So I'd come down here and I'd work in studios.
Right.
And, you know, and it was more not on my music, it was more like, oh, maybe my future is producing and writing music for other people. Yeah. Maybe that's, I was just trying to figure my life out. Like,
did you always have this music background? Did you always know that you were going to go into music?
No, like, not at all. I mean, I had a music background. Cool. I grew up in a musical house. There's music around the house, whatever.
What kind of music were you listening to as a kid?
All sorts of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of like Bee Gees and ABBA and stuff like that, you know, coupled with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, you know. So like, I mean, it was a wide span of stuff. And it's not like, you know, I think it was like any standard kind of American home, like, you know, suburban middle class home. Like everyone had to take an instrument. My mom was like, everyone's going to take some piano lessons. Or if you wanted to get into something else, whatever. And I was the guy who fought it the most, which in my family, everybody just like laughs. Like, really? You're the guy that wanted this? Like, I don't, you were like the least talented, but okay.
Wow.
You know? I mean, I got two older brothers. But how did I end up here? So I kept coming down here and, I could see that pop music was going more my direction.
Yeah, it was.
That the sound that I was into and making, me and, you know, a handful of other guys around the world were kind of like leading this charge. This is all kind of pre-EDM, right? Dance music was still kind of just
late
weird.
90s, you call it? Give me a timeline on this.
Yeah, I would say late 90s, early 2000s. Okay. But it was really like 2003, 2004, I'm like, things are changing. And I was just doing a ton of remix work. Like, oh, can you remix this Justin Timberlake? Can you remix Lady Gaga? Can you remix Beyonce? And I'm just like, I'm over here trying to like make my own songs. But these guys would pay me really well.
Yeah.
Then I would do a remix and then like that artist, like two singles later, their new song kind of sounded like how I remixed the last song. I'm like, what's going on here, man? Are these guys really listening to this stuff?
Yeah.
And I would kind of brush it off. But then the more I came down here, I met with Jimmy Iovine. He's like, hey, come to my studio, do some sessions, work on stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is the wagons are circling.
Yeah.
Like what I'm a part of is like becoming part of this more of a normal kind of
felt it happening.
Happening. Like, and I'm like, I need to be in LA. This is where things are happening. And Pasquale Rotella, Insomniac, is arguably the largest producer and promoter of this genre's events. I mean, he's like held it down here in LA for, I don't even, you know, over 20 years, 25, 30 years. I think his 25 year anniversary is coming up for EDC. So
upcoming story on Insomniac.
Yeah. He's a close, close friend of mine. Yeah. I mean, so I would come down here. He's always been a huge supporter. I can't say enough good things about Pasquale. He's been a huge guy in my corner, just like championing me and supporting me. So anyway, I saw kind of things happening. I actually, I rented a house down in San Clemente. That was my first stop getting into Southern California. Okay. So listen, I'm living in a shoebox in downtown, you know, downtown San Francisco. I have my second kid. She's literally in one of these pack and play things in the bathroom. I had to break it down to take a shower. I mean, okay, we're living in like, you know, on top of each other. You know, and things are popping and we didn't care. And, but I came down here and I rented a house in San Clemente to write the album Dynasty. I was like, let's just get out of here, take the kids down to the beach and we'll hang out by the beach. Yeah, once again, the beach means like, wow, beautiful. And I'm in San Clemente working on this album in this house. And I'm like, we just need to be here. What? I don't need to go back to this grind. Like I'm doing here and I'm driving up to LA from San Clemente. And it all kind of seemed like this is where things were happening. So then I stayed in San Clemente for a couple of years and then, you know, eventually just came up here 15 years ago. And like, now I'm like, yeah, I don't need to be anywhere else. I mean, from the minute I got here, I was like, oh, this is the place. And then I've also had a brother here that's, he's been here, I don't know, forever, like 25, 30 years. And I mean, we are constantly have these discussions. He's like, I just landed from New York, man, back to Zion, you know, like, oh, my windows are down. I mean, dude, we have this conversation all the time because anyone who grew up in the Midwest is like, there's no way it's January in 75 and I'm sitting at the pool.
90 degrees in early February this year. That's crazy.
Yeah, this winter's is actually So that's my short kind of stint about how I ended up here and how much I love it. And I think the opportunities that the city has given me. And listen, my fans just embraced me here in California, period. Like San Francisco was great to me. LA's been great to me. San Diego, I mean, everything in between. This, they just were there for me. I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for the state of California.
That's awesome. You mentioned the timing as well, right? Like with the music and the genre gaining, I don't want to say acceptance, but you know, if people started recognizing it more and started responding to it more, were the California scenes, whether it was San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, were those integral to your growth? Were those early places that really recognized and rewarded what you were doing?
100%. They were there almost from day one. I signed to a small boutique label, Ohm Records, out of San Francisco.
Boutique, but known though. Like, but known,
very, very, very cool stuff. Mark Farina, which is a
Mushroom Jazz was one of my first
legendary. Yeah. And Mark, interestingly enough, he's a Chicago kid too. So when I moved to San Francisco, I'm like relating to this guy and I'd met him a couple times and he was definitely like a mentor. Like, hey, this can be done. This is a thing. It's happening. I don't know all of it. I forgot what the question was, but
that was the right answer. Yeah. So good. Okay. So when you settled it, what was your first place in LA? That your first residence, what neighborhood? Not resident DJ, but your first home.
I moved straight into the Palisades. I rented a house in the Palisades and I was like, because my brother was in the, well, he was in Santa Monica.
Right.
And then he went to the Palisades. And I just kind of naturally came up to the west side and I like being close to the beach.
Yeah.
I liked that. And I was like, okay, I can kind of get this vibe. Like for whatever reason, where I grew up, it felt like the Palisades.
Wow. Like sands North, the beach. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Northbrook, except the beach. Well, we had the beach on Lake Michigan, but it's very, very different vibe.
I can't even imagine. We have a friend from Detroit that kind of talks about that. And it's like, no, it's beautiful. And like, you can't even see the other side of the lake. That's how big it is. I was like, okay, but the Pacific Ocean is totally a different thing.
Totally
and
different thing.
I can't wrap my head around that.
But
that's
it does,
a beach, like in the beach sense.
We still say we're going to the beach. It is the lake beach. different thing.
That's interesting. Okay. So you settle in Palisades. Now, what were your thoughts of that community initially? You're near the beach. You love it. It's beautiful. You felt like home right off the bat.
I felt like home right off the bat. I felt like we fit right in, kind of found are people. I found friends. My brother was nearby. Yeah. Like, it just, I kind of eased right in, you know, it was great. And I had been coming up here a lot, so it wasn't like a huge stretch. I didn't feel like I, you know, I knew a lot of people here. So to me, I was like, oh, this feels like home.
Now, one thing I know is that you didn't lock in the sense that a lot of people in various communities, in Palisades to Silver Lake to Santa Monica Marina, they live in this one area or one community, and that's their life, right? Like, where they're going is, I'm a Palisades person, I'm a Santa Monica person, and you know, they'll never, but you explore LA and you like seeing new spots and new restaurants. You're big on eating hole in the wall spots and stuff like that. Was that right off the bat one of your intentions? Was that something like, how did you get into start exploring Los Angeles and seeing all these great places?
Oh, dude, this is coming right back to you. And it's funny to hear it from your perspective, because the one thing with California, there's a lot of things I love, and we can go over that list. I love the California, to me, it just feels progressive. People want to do new things and make new things. It's no wonder to me why tech took hold here.
Yeah.
You know, San Francisco and even the tech scene here in LA, it's just, they're open to newness. Like, I love Chicago and I'm still a diehard Bears fan, and I still go back, travel back home and see games and whatnot and follow my teams. And I still have a lot of friends there. But Chicago is this very traditional, and there's something warm and loving about that, that like, that feels home. And in LA, it feels like people are just moving around. Although we're so progressive and we are looking for that next thing here and open-minded to it, I did feel like there's this, like, everyone feels like a transplant. And you get a lot of that. Everyone's like, well, those aren't LA people. And I'm like, I don't know any different. I'm not even at the 20 year mark yet. Right, you know, I'm just about there. But, and when I'm thinking this and having these kind of conversations, you come up on my feed randomly one day and I'm like, this is dope. This is what I'm talking about. Some dude who can show me the things about LA, the culture and those hidden spots that I don't know. I can only discover so much, and my friend network kind of goes to the same places. Yeah. And like, I needed to know these other things. And I have the same book, and I don't know if I bought it before you recommended it or after it, but it's like discovering all these new cool things about LA has been awesome. And I've done a lot of that through kind of your channel and these different people that you've plugged me into. And it's helped me understand and appreciate a lot more of the history of the city, which is what I was kind of lacking. Like, I didn't have that. Like, growing up in Chicago, you get that. You go on these, you know, in school in sixth grade, you're going to the city and going to the Field Museum and you're learning about this stuff.
Duck boats, you guys have that. What's that? That river tour. What is the
river tour? Awesome. You get on that. In eighth grade, which is a really cool thing, and maybe they do it here, we had a class called floating, where every other week, so probably about 20-25 trips over the course of the school year, you go into some historic part of Chicago and do something interesting. And it's only like a select, you know, it's like 20 kids.
Yeah.
And they do it in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade in middle school. And, you know, you gotta like really push for it. And like, I was never a great student, so I had to like really kick and scream, like, no, this is important to me. I loved that connection to the city and I loved the history of Chicago.
Even as a kid.
Well, my dad worked in the city and I was always going in there, and me and my brothers, we were the cleaning crew on the weekend. So Chicago was very much a part of, even though we were right outside the city, like I could be in my backyard and see the Sears Tower. It was a part of us growing up there. And my parents, neither of them are from the Midwest. They're from Chicago. So it was kind of like we're all discovering that together. I didn't know that at the time. You know, now as a parent, I look back and I'm like, oh, my parents were doing all that stuff for the first time, too.
Where were they from?
My dad's from Portland and my mom's from Idaho. West.
Your dad's a West Coast guy.
Yeah, they're West. They're West. I mean, we were coming out West all the time, you know, so.
That's interesting. Okay, so you say that about the history, and it's funny. And again, that's why we started LA in a Minute in the show, because, you know, you grow up, you always hear LA doesn't have history, culture, or nobody's really promoting it front and center. And you can't really look around because there aren't the plaques on all the buildings like in other cities. And you know, now they're starting to do a lot better with this kind of stuff. But it really is fun to explore and discover this stuff. What are some of the things that you've discovered about LA where you're like, I had no idea that it was, you know, for me, one of the ones I remember was oil capital of the world, you know, and it's a little niche, or the aqueduct, stuff like that. That's the history that I'm
into. I feel like every week you're teaching me something new that I'm like, I had no idea. I mean, obviously we know the Hollywood aspect and the entertainment thing, like, cool, that's out there and it's fascinating.
Yeah.
But yeah, the oil thing was cool. I mean, just from the very beginnings, like I had no idea how people got out here and what they're doing. Your little bits, and it's in a format that I can get, really
keep
short.
Keep it moving.
So I really appreciate that. I don't know. What else have I loved about it? It's just, it's made me appreciate LA more living here and just like learning some of these factoids and just these bits. And it's,
get sweet deals at True North convenience stores when you join True Rewards. Save a dollar when you buy any two king or standard size candy bars. Get more Kit Kat Crunch, Milky Way Caramel, and more peanut M&Ms. Choose any of your chocolate favorites when you grab two king or standard size candy bars and save $1. Become a True Rewards member today and save on so much more. Download from the Apple app or Google Play Store for more details. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
What you heard right there was the power of audio. And audio is what we do at Odyssey. That true crime podcast you spent hours listening to, we produced that. That radio station where you discovered your favorite artists, that's our station. That weird playlist of bongo music, we ain't judging. One of our curators made that. Advertise with Odyssey. We can get your message in front of a broad or targeted audience. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's cool, I don't...
And how do you go? So let's say, you know, you're a very, very busy person, world touring. I know you mentioned before we got on, you just came back from Sydney. Like, you know, I think I heard Orlando in there as well. But you're all over all the time. When do you have time to settle in and enjoy the city with your chaotic schedule?
I think part of my experience is, you know, when you move somewhere, it takes you, 6 months to, like, get the guy who cuts your hair, and where are you going to drop off your dry cleaning, and like who's going to babysit your kid, and like, you know, you have all these like things that, you know, when you move to a place. For me, that window's a lot longer because like I'm gone all the time and coming back, so it always takes me a couple years to get somewhere and feel like, okay, cool, now this is actually live here. So it's taking me a lot longer, but man, I don't know, you know, I've been here over 15 years now, so I'm feeling, I mean, this is my home now. I mean,
but are you driving around? Are you exploring? Do you have destinations in mind? Are you like, you know what? I never go out to Boyle Heights, or like, how does it come up where you decide, or like, there's a burger spot? Like, da, da, da,
it's usually motivated by food.
Yes, there we go. Okay. Are there spots in LA that you've discovered? Like,
and I see you talking to some of the same food guys that you're liking their stuff, and then I see it and I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta go check out that taco spot, or I gotta check out this, or
classic burgers. That's my forte.
Yeah, I mean,
tacos, come on.
I love burgers too. Yeah, I'm on the west side, so Hi-Ho's been a cool thing for us over there. But yeah. I mean, there's a lot of smash burgers at what is it, For the Win, and like, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm just always out trying to find like a cool little, and I love, like you said, I'm all about the hole in the wall, like the hoity-toity, whatever, cool. I get a lot of that on the road, people whining and dining me.
Yeah.
I want to like, where are the people eating?
Thank
you know, like,
you.
What am I, and it's, where's it's, the food?
You know? It's a great experience. So like my wife and I, you know, when it's a special date, you know, anniversary, something, you do the like Michelin or like the fancy, like nice place, which are good. And they're great meals. But it's like the atmosphere and the environment. Where was that? East Side Italian Deli. Right in the blocks away from Dodger Stadium, right? It's been around since, I want to say, 1929. It's a sandwich spot I'd always heard of. And I was like, yeah, I'll get there. End up going a few weeks ago. And the sandwich was phenomenal, first and foremost. But it's not even about the food for me. It's like when you go in and you feel the history, you see the people eating, like, and you're like, yeah, this is LA. Like, honestly, you got, you know, there's, you know, Latino people, there are Asian people, there are Black people, like, and it's just dope seeing inside. You're like, this is the spot to be. And then it, for me, I don't I can't even tell you what I ordered. You know what I mean? But I remember how I felt.
It's a whole experience.
And I remember that I loved
that's it.
That's it. And that's like what LA is about. So, I mean, it's like places like that that make it awesome. And look, we've been to like Dunsmore, you know, Evan Funky's spots, which are great. All those are great restaurants, but it's like the little spots. Apple Pan. Are you an Apple Pan guy? West Side?
Yeah. Burger? I've hit that a couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. And it's like, those are the spots that kind of really resonate for me because they have that history and they are like places like Los Angeles places. So like, that's what we love exploring. Are you a driver? You like driving around LA?
I mean, the traffic here is another thing, man. It's wild. I can only
even
like
coming from Chicago though, which is no slouch when it comes to traffic though.
Well, I just think everywhere's gotten worse over the last 20 years. You know, being an adult, I'm like, I don't remember it ever being this bad as a kid. You know, like now.
It's my wife's thing is overpopulation. It's like her pet issue. It's like 8 billion people in the world and it's only going to be growing more exponentially. And she says there's too many people, which, you know.
but I like driving. I like seeing LA. I think another thing that helped me appreciate LA a lot was I started flying a helicopter 7-8 years ago and I got my license. So
wait, really? How?
Dude, we got to go up. You're going to trip. Have you ever done the LA? So I take my friends on a loop of LA and
you're kidding me.
It's
let's go. Absolutely. But now I got it. How did you get into that and where did that start? And listen, I got to bring it up. This is LA, like Kobe Bryant, like, you know, so tell me all these things like factoring in into Cascade flying helicopters around Los Angeles.
I'll try and give you the shortest version. Let's see. I'm going through a divorce right now, but my wife, she's still currently married, is a big, I mean, she's an amazing pilot and she actually helped fight the fire here in the Palisades. Yeah. She's made it her profession. So maybe about 10 years
helicopter
ago.
Helicopter or?
She does helicopters. Yeah. She's a helicopter pilot. She's a commercial helicopter pilot. She flies second in command on a Black Hawk. And these are the big helicopters that drop the water. You know, the Black Hawks are the big massive ones, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll flex for her. She's amazing person, amazing pilot. She got into it first. We were actually going to a festival in a helicopter and she's like, this happens actually fairly often, especially in some of these other countries, like in Brazil, they're like, we land here and we got to get you there in this certain amount of time. So we're flying you in a helicopter. I'm like, all right.
Brazil is, by the way, the biggest helicopter. I think it's Sao Paulo is the biggest helicopter city in the world.
Because the traffic there makes LA look like nothing, like minor leagues over here.
Okay.
You guys have traffic, you know, they laugh at us.
Wow. Okay. So we're flying around.
So we get into it. She gets into it and she starts, and it was kind of one of these things, and this is going to sound, I'm not this guy really, but at one point she's like getting into it and taking lessons and totally into it. And I'm like, listen, you get your license, we should get a helicopter. I'm like, you get the license, let's get a helicopter. Let's figure out a way to get a helicopter. Yeah. And listen, they're expensive, but I've done well. And I'm like, we can make this happen. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And we bought the kind of like very reliable that's made here in the South Bay, the Robinson helicopters. So we own a R-66 and that's what we trained on, a 44 here in the South Bay. And she really got into it. And at one point she's like, hey, you know, if we're flying around in this thing and anything ever happens to me, like, she's completely healthy. She's like, you should at least know how to like put this thing down. You should go take 3 or 4 lessons.
Wow. Okay.
And kind of when she said it, I was like, are you sure you're saying this? Like, cause I know I'm going to get in that thing and I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, just, she's like, if you love it, cool. Get your license too, whatever. So sure enough, I started flying, you know, I don't know, 6 or 8 months after she did and got into it. And it was just, for me, it was just one of these things that I could completely unplug. My work has been, it's a blessing to have success, but it's also like this thing, like careful what you wish for. Cause then all of a sudden my entire life was music, like house music on the road.
You're just like, you can't,
I mean, every day. So I couldn't, I didn't have a lot of outside of that.
Yeah.
And it kind of came at a time where I was like, you know, it would be good to have a hobby or something. Like I need, like, you know, every minute of every day doesn't have to be just
Cascade. Like, I can have like this other thing. So I started flying and I enjoyed it. And then I got my license like right before COVID, which was awesome, because when COVID was happening, there was like no air traffic. So I was just like, I don't know, there's nothing to do today. I'm just going to go fly around LA. So I was just like cruising LA. And it's so really beautiful. When I logged in, so many hours. Yeah. And it was great because there's no other planes around. I could be flying through LA airspace, like through LAX. And they're like letting me fly really low, which would never happen now. They're like, yeah dude, cross at 1,500 feet. You know, I'm talking to the tower. Yeah. They're letting me cross really low. And, you know, because there's no other. So I got really familiar with the LA airspace just kind of during that time and flying around and racked up a lot of hours and more confidence. I don't fly as much as I used to, but I mean, even for daytime shows in Las Vegas, I would fly myself, play the pool show, and then just fly right back.
Oh, man. How long does it take to get to Vegas on a helicopter, by the way?
2 hours, 2 hours and a little bit. It's helicopters aren't really made for speed.
Yeah.
They're made more, it's kind of like, it's more of an adventure mobile is how I look at it. It's like you take a helicopter if you want to see, if you want to get somewhere, you take a wise man once said to me, if you want to, you know, get somewhere, you take a plane. If you want to see something, you take a helicopter. And back to your whole beginning of this question, what gave me more appreciation for LA and its vastness and all these different neighborhoods and like the sheer magnitude of Los Angeles? I think that gets lost on a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, like they come to LA and, you know, the age old funny thing, like, oh, I want to go to Disneyland and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And you're Hollywood, like, bro, Dodger game, that's a week's worth of stuff.
Totally.
You know,
totally. What should I do for a week? If friends come out, I'm coming to LA, what should I do in a weekend? I'm like, I'm going to give you like two things. Cause that's what it's going to be.
That's reality. Yeah. But flying a helicopter around has been just a really cool thing. So I'm always zipping around and, you know, doing whatever. And I kind of have a loop that I do with my friends that kind of gives you the whole, you know, this is LA. It takes about an hour to do a big loop around LA.
Have you discovered new areas or architecture, or is there a certain thing you're kind of infatuated with, like the LA River? Like, what do you see when you're up there? Or how does that mind state work?
I think something that that is underappreciated here is just the island where the Cubs used to come. And
Catalina.
Catalina is. Dude, you get on the backside of Catalina and it's like, there's the uniqueness of LA. This is where I think people get lost. They think of LA and they see downtown or they see, you know, the pier at Santa Monica. It's like, dude, we got so much. I mean, you're on that backside of Catalina, even where, you know, where the boats come there and park in Catalina.
Yeah. There's two harbors.
Because I fly through that gap right there. That backside, dude, you could be in Ibiza. I mean, it's no different.
Wow.
And it's literally 20-minute flight
LA's
from LA.
Island,
I mean, dude, you get on a boat and it's only a 30-minute ride or whatever. It's not far. And it's like this exotic, amazing place that's right there, you know, with, you know, cattle walking around in the buffalo. I mean, it's like mind blowing. And just even the history on that little island, I'm like, this is crazy.
This is such a good, like, insight, because Catalina is part of the Channel Islands.
Yep.
And I just learned this. My buddy Tim, great friend, Tim, shout out. He's a park ranger for Channel Islands. And he was telling me, and, you know, checks out, the Channel Islands are amongst the most diverse ecosystems in the entire world. So you're talking about, you know, you mentioned the buffalo, which are transplants. But other than that, you know, coyotes, foxes, a wolf just, by the way, entered LA County. I don't know if anybody heard that.
I saw that.
A wolf came into LA County for the first time in 100 years, by the way. But all the fish, the dolphins, the whales, like the birds, you know, I could sit here listening to it for hours, but it really is beautiful. And that was a good answer. The Catalina, and you mentioned Ibiza, because one of my questions for you, Catalina notwithstanding, is there any city in the world that reminds you of LA?
It's interesting. I was just there. I've been there, I don't know, probably 20 different times. I used to tour there quite a bit. Sydney is, it's like our cousin, I would say.
Okay, okay.
Because it's on the ocean. It has that vibe. we're actually relatively close to them from their point of view. Yeah. You know, they don't have a lot down there. They just got that South Asia. So I feel like a lot of Australians come here to America and they kind of enter through San Francisco or Los Angeles. But just the vibe of the people are cool. They're laid back. They're on the coast. Sydney would be my first kind of answer. But I remember the first time I went there and I'm like, where can we get some, where can we get a burrito? And he's like, there's no Mexican food here, dude. I'm like, what? I'm like, somebody needs to come here. And now they've got like their version of Chipotle and whatnot. Yeah. You know, it's kind of moved over there. But Barcelona's got a little bit of a LA vibe, I'd say, because it's on the ocean. It's kind of got a laid back, kind of cool, definitely Euro vibe. But yeah, I'd put those two cities kind of.
Barcelona's a great. We were in Barcelona for 12 hours. That was my experience. My wife lost her wallet and it became a debacle. But so we didn't even get to see the Gaudi. Like, you know, I know.
Just insane. Go back. Barcelona's like of places to hit, that's at or near the top.
That's what for me. Madrid, we did a long time. She studied
Madrid,
in Spain.
Madrid's great.
Yeah, Madrid. Yep. Salamanca was her study. But as far as cities, what are your favorite cities in the world outside of LA? And I know you mentioned Barcelona and Sydney.
Those are great. Those are two favorites. I would put Tokyo at the top of that list.
Gotta go. Yeah.
Tokyo is, and Japan's made it really kind of affordable to go over there and see. It's an amazing, I don't know, the Japanese are like, I feel like they're farther ahead of Americans on how to live with one another and do it in a way where there's not a lot of friction. It's just when you're in Tokyo and you're in the downtown and you just, people are like, I mean, everyone's seen that shot of the Shibuya crossing.
Yeah.
And it's one of those cities where it's like the magnitude is just, you can go and eat on, I forget what hotel it is. You eat on the 32nd floor and you can just, you look around, it's windows all around. You're on that top floor. And Tokyo just doesn't, it's similar to LA where it just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It just keeps going into whatever that next place is, whatever the next city, it just keeps going and it's vast and amazing. But then you are in it and it's just clean and people are respectful and polite and,
always hear
it's,
that.
It's an amazing place. And Tokyo has an edge. I volunteered and I serve a full-time mission for my church in Tokyo. I was in Japan. Where I went. And so I have like an affinity, a love for that place, but then being able to go back there for work and it's been cool. And they were, I should say, Australia and Japan were really early kind of adopters of my, I had fans that were really early on in my career.
Okay. How does that feel to be adopted in embraced worldwide, man? Like,
it's insane. It's weird. And to this day, it's still totally weird. It's like all of this, I kind of just like do this in the mirror every once in a while and be like, this is really happening. Like, this is, I have those moments all the time. People are like, hey, explain to me. I'm like, I can't, I don't know. There's no words to try and describe how I feel and how this happened. And it's impossible. I mean, I'm like literally living my dream. And the thing is like, I never even dreamt this big.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, okay, cool. Can I pay my rent? Can I maybe get a house someday? And then when things just started going crazy, I was like, whoa, like, I don't even know how to manage this. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, just trying to control all the chaos and the interest that was going on around it.
Okay, so with that chaos and the different factors, how did you still, as you're growing and as you're being embraced literally worldwide, how do you still focus on the music? Where was that kind of creative process coming from, or the focus to have that creative process?
To me, it starts and stops with the music. I got into this because house music, if you don't know, is a very much a Chicago kind of Detroit thing. I got a lot of pride with that.
Yeah. Pioneer City, right?
Yeah. We really were the guys. When I say we, it wasn't me. I was a little kid going and watching and hearing these guys. I'm definitely part of that second or third iteration of people that came out of that scene that was birthed in Chicago. I'm sorry, I lost my. I was thinking about
when you're worldwide, and now you got all these factors, people pushing and pulling, and adulation. Yeah,
it was always easy for me to return to the music because that's where the love is for me. like, cool. It wasn't about being famous or making a lot of money or like having a great pair of shoes or whatever. I just didn't like buy into that part of it.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason I didn't buy in is because it didn't really exist. It was always like this niche little boutique-y kind of like side thing. We weren't hip hop. We weren't pop music. We were just like, cool. We were club kids. We're making our little beats. We didn't think it would really. So it wasn't about that. It was like, hey man, can I make a living doing this thing?
Yeah.
And it, you know, and it, listen, when I first moved to LA, it was still, like I said, I was still like, oh, maybe my thing will be I'm producing for other people. Yeah. Or, you know, I didn't know how it was going to unfold.
How big it would end up getting. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? So, and even now, look, these guys that have come after me, like the John Summits and like, you know, Calvin Harris, you know, he's probably one iteration after me. And just where they've been able to take it, it still just blows my mind. And part of me, it's just like, yeah, because it's kind of like, those are my people. This is the sound. Because it was such, like, it was such a small group of people doing it,
yeah,
that we all kind of rooted for one another. I mean, it's long since grown past that, yeah, point, but I still kind of have that. There's a lot of pride associated with the success of.
Get sweet deals at True North convenience stores when you join True Rewards. Save a dollar when you buy any two king or standard size candy bars. Get more Kit Kat Crunch, Milky Way Caramel, and more peanut M&Ms. Choose any of your chocolate favorites when you grab two king or standard size candy bars and save $1. Become a True Rewards member today and save on so much more. Download from the Apple app or Google Play Store for more details. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
This music, you know.
Who were your inspirations and who were people that sort of mentored you or helped you grow as you were developing as a solo artist?
Frankie Knuckles is kind of the pioneer and referred to as the godfather of house music. Yeah. And I rightfully so. I'm a Chicago guy. Of course, I'm going to say that. And he was always very cool to me. I only bumped into a handful. I got to hang out with him a handful of times. I had dinner with him once, which I look back at that and I'm just like, man, if I would have known that was the only dinner I was going to have with the guy, I probably would have just continued to just like order food. No, stay, you know? Because I was just picking his brain, yeah, and just trying to soak it all in. You know, I was a young guy. Awesome. But the fact that he'd even go sit down with me, you know, I was just some punk kid like coming up. But right, he was always super respectful. I think he liked my music. You know, yeah, he's like, man, you're, yeah, doing it from a different angle. Like, he got it. I think the first time I saw or met him, I was in Chicago, of all places, in the record store. And he walks in. It's like, oh, this is the guy, you know. But he was a big deal. The Hot Mix 5 was a group of DJs, Bad Boy Bill, all these guys were Chicago dudes kind, yeah, of coming up. And I was just this kid listening to the radio. Then I'd say like that next phase was Derek Carter and Mark Farina were the guys that were like kind of guys that were around my age, but doing it. I was always just a guy going to the club and kind of listening and just buying stuff. It took me to go to university to be like, oh no, I'll throw my own parties and I can figure the DJ thing, yeah, out. I'll figure out how to do it.
So interesting. Were you you were a party kid, club kid, like doing that?
I mean, I never really like partied. Yeah. I was just a music nerd. Really, I was just...
You owned a record store, right?
I did own a record, yeah, store in Salt Lake. It was... When I got to Salt Lake, I was like, there's no scene. If there's going to be any scene, or the scene's so small, I need to like help cultivate this. Yeah. It's kind of how...
Seems like a...
So I went from like a guy that was...
To build that. Yeah. Yeah. Although I know Salt Lake's cool now. Like, I know it is, but like...
Well, Salt Lake's an interesting place, but it... and it has grown up a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Those places in the middle, Denver, like there's a lot of interesting cities there in the middle. A lot of, you
right,
know,
mm-hmm. Interesting is a good way to put it. Yeah.
What's my point here? I just realized like I can't just be some person who participates and goes out on the weekend. Like if I want there to be a scene, I gotta like actively engage in this. So that's how my friend owned a record store. It was two of my friends, and it was Jody, actually, who works on my social media team.
Shout out Jody. Yeah.
And when she split and left to go work another gig, she's like, you want to buy my half? And I was like, yeah. And I mean, I was just a dude hanging out in the record store all the time. You know, it was full high fidelity. We're just in there like, oh, this record's better than Rack Record. And, oh, what's hot? This, you know, it was totally that scene. I was the Jack Black guy just hanging out. And like, you know, I'd work like one day a week. And, you know, I was going to college and snowboarding a lot and just hanging
BYU,
out.
BYU, right? And then University of Utah, right?
Yeah.
So you covered it there. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And a short stint in New York. I did about a year in New York working for a Japanese company. They recruited me and I went out there and
worked. Did you learn Japanese, by the way? I meant to ask.
Oh, yeah. Mada nihon
arashimasu
yo. My Japanese pretty rusty, but I can hang.
Good job.
So, okay. I've been back 30 years, so it's been a while.
It's fair, though. You already impressed me, man.
But I got a minor in Japanese when I was in school. I came back, tested
out. What was your major?
Communication. Yeah, so
wow.
I did a little radio show stint, you know, I was kind of doing my thing. And then I graduated and was like, I'm going to make music. I don't know, whatever.
Okay, I want to talk about the music for a second. And this goes back to my private raves and your residency in Vegas. And we are going to get to Vegas. But one thing about your music that's significant, and I think, you know, it's not to say that people before you didn't have that ability to connect, because that's what music is to make people feel a certain way. But there are stories. I've seen it myself. People crying at your shows, you know, where you move people. And let me just bring it to myself. Like, again, these private raises with my wife, like, not to get too personal, but, you know, we've had our ups and downs in our relationship. And one of the ways that we kind of rekindle the bond is to, you know, some champagne and things at night. And throw on some Cascade and just let it all melt together. And honestly, like, not sound corny, but cry in each other's arms. And like, you create these emotions, right? Like, I'm a hip hop guy. This is the truth. Like, growing up, I was a hip hop guy, underground hip hop, West Coast hip hop. And then I discovered, you know, electronic music, and it's a totally different, emotional package that you're delivering, but it's something like yours where you go on the journey and you feel that spirit and it takes you to these emotional places inside that you're not even really like intending to go, but it just happens, you know, like 4 a.m. Turn It Down, all your classics. Like, so where does that come from? Like, how does it feel to be able to do that to people?
First of all, yeah, the connecting with people and the music, I have people writing me letters all the time and just really saying kind things, you know, like, hey, your music helped me get through a hard time or whatever that connection is awesome. Yeah. I another one of those kind of like, I'm just grateful to be here and that the music reached anyone. I think in a really, anyone who's not familiar with me and watching the podcast or whatever, I think for me, listen, 95% of dance music in the 90s was just me. It was more drum and rhythm stuff. Yeah. That there's like a sonic element that's interesting and different that with synthesizers can be quite emotional. It's a very euphoric feeling.
Right.
That's why I feel like a lot of people kind of work out to dance music, right? They're like, oh, give me some EDM bangers. Like, I'm going to go, you know, lift weights and get jacked.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
Kind of when I came into it, I really, the house music songs that were like legendary to me all had a vocal in it, you know, or had this thing that I could get into, even if it was just like one or two lines. And that was the memorable stuff. And I was like, man, there isn't really a lot of songwriting in here. And my kind of angle where I saw opportunity was I want to marry this kind of like sonic evolution that's happening in, you know, house music, like that's this kind of next wave of electronic music with songwriting. Cause I was a huge, like The Cure, The Smiths, NXS, like all that new order, all this wave where those guys were brilliant songwriters, but it had this cool feel from the UK. Like, what is this stuff? I mean, for us as kids, it was like, what is this? You know, I had two older brothers. So it was like, you know, Zeppelin and The Who and like classic rock stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then when I discovered The Smiths, I was like, what, you know, I was like, woo, what is this guy's a genius. I love The Cure, you know, so discovered that. And I was like, how can I bring that to electronic music? And I kind of fancied myself a little bit of a writer. My grandma was a great poet. And I was like, man, maybe I have that. I need to kind of foster that. And then I met somebody in the scene, Finn Bjarnason, who I've written a couple hundred songs with. I don't even know.
Kept
this
coming
point.
Up when I was doing my homework. Absolutely.
Well, and he was the guy that was like, hey man, your beats are cool, but bro, songwriting is where it's at. And I was just like, you're right. So when I connected with Ohm and I was working at Ohm, I was pitching them stuff and I was working with songwriters and making music that was, you know, sonically forward leaning, but still a song. And I think where the magic happened and when something special happens is when you write a song that has meaning and it means something and you're sharing that with somebody, but then sonically it's just new and fresh. And you know, I've had a couple of those moments in my career, luckily and thankfully, that like I've been able to like get those things to happen in a really great way. Like I remember is, you know, Rolling Stone top 20 dance song of all time type of thing, you know? And I think there was real sonic innovation that Deadmau5 was doing. And I was like, let me write with you and let's work on something. And we really made a moment there. You know, progressive house anthem, whatever people want to call it. But that was kind of my approach to this thing. And I think that's where this connection comes in. It's like not just like beats. It's, you know, if people think of DJs, oh, this dude just making some beats on a sampler. Like, there's more, you know, I'm writing songs over here. I'm trying to like share part of myself in this song. Let's see. And I think that's, and that's why I think electronic music kind of blew up. It, you know, we didn't have the technology 30 years ago, but now any kid on a laptop can do that.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, you could do it on your phone now for crying out loud, you know, sing into the phone. I can't. Do the same.
I can't, but people can.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Sure. Okay. How did Los Angeles affect or inspire any of your music? Is there anything about the city that
can for sure. For sure. And you're going to like this. You'll appreciate this. This is great that we're having this conversation because you'll appreciate this. Like, I think my sound is very kind of breezy, oceanside kind of sound. And I didn't do that intentionally. It's just because I've been here. I think when I lived in San Francisco, I was right next to the ocean. I think it was just that draw for me from when I was a kid. Like, oh, the ocean meant like something. That was where you went to get away and take a break and where we vacationed. So when I came to the West, I want to live by the beach. But I think those sounds just made their way in. That vibe is a part of who I am. And there's no way you can separate these things. And interestingly enough, and what I would say is like, I think the reason I hit in Sydney, the reason I hit in Barcelona, the reason I hit down there in South America on these beach cities is because I think these people who lived on the coast were listening to this and connecting with that energy to me. Cause I kept going to these places. I'm like, wow, this is like LA. This is, you know, and I'm like, oh, this is my sounds resonating with other people who are living similar lives as me, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just in there. And if somebody could say, hey, what is that? Put your finger on it. I have no idea.
That was the answer. You just nailed it. You hit that out of the park. I got to talk about your most recent, your new album. First of all, congratulations. Dancer became the first number one hit. What was that? The first number one song that's an electronic music song?
It's number one on Billboard, but they said it was the first time I didn't have anybody else.
Solo.
It wasn't a collab. It was my first solo number one, which I don't know. Billboard's got a million different charts and things or whatever.
But it's still a good
it's a cool thing.
But the reason why I bring that up, so the new album, Undo.
Yeah.
It was your first solo album in 10 plus years, right?
Yeah.
And it was heavily affected by, or is heavily inspired by your experience in the Palisades.
Big time.
Post fires, right?
Yeah, you saw the LA Times article.
Also my wife was like, you gotta hear this album. It's like, there's new evolution.
This is a tough subject and I don't want to get too political here, but yes, I think anyone on the West Side is had their feelings hurt in this last year.
Okay, so you don't need to get political, but I will say this.
Yes.
You know, I spent a lot of time in Altadena, Malibu, Palisades, since the fires. Okay. And The atmosphere is obviously one of tragedy, recovery, rebuilding, hope. But I do feel that people in the Palisades are the most pissed off, frankly, in the aftermath, and perhaps rightfully so. I'm not going to pin you on any of that kind of stuff. But it was a very tough situation that maybe, I'm not going to say it could have been avoided, but definitely seems like it could have been mitigated. And people were pissed and people were angry. And I know that a lot of people, you know, including your brother, lost their homes, yeah, which is tragic. But just tell me, how did that affect the songwriting and the album creation process? Because your sound was different. And how did that go into it? How does that affect you as you're writing and creating music?
When you go into the studio, this has been my experience. I don't know, I'm sure there's other songwriters out there that could share their experience as well. When you go into the studio, there's no real, you're kind of writing about what you feel.
Yeah.
What is your life experience? What are you going to write a song about? The stuff that is honest is the stuff that typically connects. 100%. Right?
Genuine authenticity.
Authenticity, man, is the deal.
Yeah.
So cool. I can sit down in the studio and be like, hey, man, let me go back to my 15-year-old self and I broke up with my first girlfriend and I can write a song about that. And that's cool. And you can go there. Or I just saw this thing on TV and wow, let's write a song about like, oh, this guy and this happened and this, whatever. We can write a song about. But the stuff for me that's worked the best is just sitting down and writing about what I'm going through.
Yeah.
And I think coming off of the fire, I was pissed, super angrier than probably I've ever been in my life.
Wow.
But more than that, I was just sad. Seeing a community destroyed is just like, it's sad. It's sad. I go up there, I drove through it. I watched the Super Bowl at my friend's house in the Highlands. His house made it. And I'm just sad. I drive through it. I'm sad. I'm pissed. I'm sad. I'm more sad than I'm pissed now.
Yeah.
Whatever. Spencer Pratt comes up on my timeline, and then I get pissed again. You know, and like
mayoral candidate Spencer Pratt.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Okay. You know. On. So I just think with Undo, instead of kind of trying to like skirt around it, I'm like, cool. I just need to embrace this and talk about it and write about it and just get it out there. The reason I hadn't put an album out in 10 years is because how people consume music is totally different now than what it was 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, yeah. We're old guys, so we can be like, sorry, I'm not saying you're an old guy. We're not old, but we're of middle age.
Yeah.
And we can say, man, and our date was so much better and it was so much cooler and this and that. And the reason why I think these streaming platforms just change how people interact with music.
Of course.
And it, so for me, I felt like to try and move and change with that. So I didn't put an album out for a long time. I was just putting singles out because the algorithm works better with just one little tiny bit of information, putting out a big idea. And I can even see that Undo's having some success. And that's wonderful. But as an album, you know, what's getting listened to are just the singles, of course. So, but you know what? To me, I'm at a point where like, I don't care. I want to share this idea. And it's been like that for probably 2 or 3 years. I just was having a hard time of like setting the time aside to get around to writing an album. So when I came to do this, the timing was terrible. I'm like, I'm pissed. I'm angry. My whole town just burned down. Like, what am I supposed to do here? Personally, I'm going through a lot. Two of my kids have graduated, moved on. I only got, you know, like a lot's going on in my life. And the fact that my entire community's been just blown up. So instead of running from it, I was just like, I need to just write about it. Cool. I'm not going to get the album that my manager wants or the label wants or the Spotify algorithm wants or the Apple Tunes guys want, you know, but I don't care. Like, you know, kind of when you've been doing it for 30 years, you can be like, yeah, I don't care what you guys want. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah,
get with it or not. And what's cool is
we deserve that.
People have appreciated it.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And it's set me up for really kind of having this clean slate going into work on the next album, which I'm doing because I'm prepping for my next Coachella show here coming up. And that's all I've been doing for the last 4 months is actually working on that one show, which people are like, what? That's crazy. But that's how much goes into Coachella. Coachella is the, I can say this kind of without a doubt, it is like, it's It's arguably the most important festival in the world. 100%. It sets the tone for the entire world. What happened? And that's an LA thing,
yes.
Right? Southern California. Here Absolutely. We are. We don't realize how much what we do here sets the tone throughout the world. That's what I've seen. That's been my experience.
Wow, that's incredible, man. Great. Way to bring that home to Coachella. And now I want to take it over across the desert. Let's talk about Vegas and the residency.
Yeah.
Encore, by the way. First of all, that was a really special time in Vegas, in my opinion. Vegas has evolved. I'm a big Vegas guy. My dad was a boxing manager.
Yeah, I've heard senior story, man. It's super cool, dude.
So we got to go to Vegas all the time growing up. You know, back in the days of 99-cent shrimp cocktails, 18-inch hot dogs at the Westward Ho, buffets was how you eat. And then all of a sudden, Hard Rock and Palms off the strip became like the cool places and the daytime pool. I remember when the clubs were like, what was it? The Jungle and the beach, where they were off strip clubs, not affiliated with the hotels. And then all of a sudden, Hard Rock and Palms come in. And then like, it wasn't just that the entertainment changed, but Vegas just changed dramatically over like that decade. And it became about the party, less about gambling, less about the casino. And all of a sudden, before you know it, like, whether it's Marquee at Cosmo, Encore, the Wind, like everywhere had these clubs. And that was the thing. And then now Cascade is headlining and has a residency at Encore. How did that even come together? And then what was that like for you kind of stewarding Vegas into becoming the hottest spot on the entire planet for the next decade?
Dude, your perspective is insane because you were in it.
Yeah, dude.
You were in it. I love to hear this. I'm going to tell it as honestly as I can. Here we are 15, 16 years later from that kind of explosion. Really, it was kind of a selfish thing, which doesn't bode well later, but let me tell you why.
Yeah, you gave so much to us. Huh?
Right.
I think it's selfish.
So
yeah, God.
It's kind of, let's set it up a little bit for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah.
LA is not really a nightlife city.
Fuck, thank you.
Okay. And I'm not trying to knock it. No. I love LA. I'm here. This is where I want to be.
Yep.
But it's like, the reason it's not a nightlife city and the reason it's not the biggest sports town, and I'm saying that coming from Chicago, where we live, eat, and breathe.
No arguments.
And what Nakua was just saying, like, we don't ever have home games. You know, I get it.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because it's 78 degrees right now and I'm going to go on a hike and ride my mountain bike or I'm going to go surf. Like, dude, we got 50,000 other things to do that are completely epic.
Yep.
Dude, in Chicago in January, the only thing you're doing is going to a Bears game. That's it, dude. Your whole life is revolving around that Sunday game.
Right.
Dude, for us, that's a side note, man. Yeah, I'll make it to SoFi if I can. Oh, there's a Thursday night game this week. Yeah, I'll make it over there. I don't know, dude. The surf is really good this week. Yeah. Like, you got all these other things. So, look, nightlife, it was cool here, and there's definitely been an underground scene, and Pascal fostered something insane. But when Vegas came along, I was like, oh. I played a couple of shows in Vegas, and I could see that things were bubbling. And this was all kind of pre-EDM explosion. But I could see, like, oh, the landscape's changing.
Yeah.
So this is 2007, 2008. I could feel it. I was like, this whole thing's going to...
It's about to blow.
This thing's just going to go bananas. Like, I can see it. The writing's on the wall. How big it's going to go, I don't know. And I'm talking about the scene in general. But, dude, you know Vegas gets in. This is the entertainment capital of the world. So here comes Vegas. I play a couple of shows for these guys. The shows are a huge success. And they're stoked because it's a young, cool, hip audience spending tons of money. Yeah. So all of a sudden, they're invested. And I sit down in 2009. Dude, I'll never remember. I flew out to Vegas, dude. And we go to the parking lot across from what is now Encore Beach Club. And we're looking down on the space. And they roll out these plans. And they're like, we're building a pool. And we want to have this chic, cool, like, pool party thing. And we want you to come here once a month and help us, like, curate the vibe. And I'm like, I got a better idea for you. And this is where the selfish part comes on. Because I'm 3 or 4 times a summer, I'm flying to Ibiza, which is dude, door to door, it's a 24-hour trip.
Yeah.
Painful. And I get to Ibiza, and it's cool. Europe, for me, I never totally broke into Europe because they're like, oh, it's this American guy. It's kind of, I had my hot spots. You know, what's this dude?
Yeah.
He's got an attitude. His house, his music's a little bit, it's fluffy. He's like some Beach Boys version of house music. Wow. What is this guy? What, you know? So it was always kind of like, like they were down with me, but they weren't, you know. And when I played there, I was like, more energy. And I'm like, bro, this is it, dude. This is peak for me. So, and I had to fly all the way over there. And I have a young family. And I'm like, man, if Vegas could hit, this would change my life. So I went to them. I'm like, Mr. Wynn, you don't need to have me once a month during the summer. You guys are opening from Memorial Day to Labor Day. I'll do every single week. And they're like, it's on. And no one had done a seasonal residency. And I was just like, dude, this is, they're doing these seasonal residencies in Ibiza during the summer. And all these people travel from all over Europe to see these people. I'm like, we could do the same thing because kids from LA will make the drive. Kids from Arizona will make the
backyard,
drive.
Bro.
I think San Francisco guys will make the drive. You know, like I'm like starting to like, this could be a thing. And I didn't, when I was saying a thing, I didn't know that it would be what it became.
Yeah,
but I just knew like, cool, I can get a paycheck and it's right close to my house. And I think it can work.
Yeah.
And dude, cut to Memorial Day weekend. I mean, now, dude, we start Vegas pool shows in late March. That's how much money it has made.
Right.
I mean, we're talking not millions or hundreds of millions. This is a $1 billion industry.
Of course. All you need to do is go there completely in the last 15 years.
So
it changed Las Vegas.
Changed
man.
The thing.
Like,
so from that winter to Memorial Day, they worked around the clock as Vegas does. And Mr. Wynn's like, we'll get it done.
Wait, literal Mr. Wynn, like you were face to face with Steve Wynn?
Dude, I've hung with that guy, and his stories on Instagram are amazing. He's another amazing follow. He's giving these old stories. I'm like, this guy is such a gem, man. Like what he's—
Because he has the old Vegas in him too, is the best part. Yeah.
His stories are amazing.
Yeah.
Like I could sit and listen to tell stories. When I hung with him, I'd be like, just tell me some stories, dude.
Wow. Wow.
What's up? Okay. Just tell me. And he would just like love it. And he can't see. So when you talk to him sometimes and he's getting into it, he'll get right nose to nose with you, man. Like bumping nose. It's great.
Okay.
Great guy who's treated me incredibly well and very fair over the years. So I really have nothing but good things to say about him because he kind of got the vision.
Absolutely.
Him and the created people that were around him, Sean Christie, there were a bunch of dudes around him that were like wanting this to happen. But anyway, cut to the first day we open. I fly there from wherever, I don't know who I was, the night before we get there. And it's hard for me to exaggerate this because it was so nuts. The place holds like 5,500 people. It's sold out. I mean, dude, I'm on some, like the DJ setup's on like a thing like this. It's painted pink or something. Like, no, we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
To them, it was like, play some tunes, people hang out and they're going to order cocktails and eat like, you know, some shrimp by the pool. And it'll be like this whole vibe. Dude, we get in there and the place is like, heaving. I mean, dude, there's 5,500 people, 6,000 people inside this thing. There's 10,000 people lined up down the strip trying to get in.
I know. That was
and
me.
It just was
that
like
was me in those lines. Yeah.
I mean, every casino was there that day to see if it would work. And guess what?
Yeah.
That day, I'm sure all those guys went back, heads of entertainment, and they're like, we're building a pool. We're putting a sound system. And through those next seasons, everybody opened up. And what happened and why it changed my life is because that casino money is no joke. It changed Ibiza because the buying power of the casinos was like, yeah, don't go over there. So all these massive acts, you know, guys like Swedish House Mafia, or what, you know, you have to rewind 10, 15 years ago, even Avicii, like everyone was all of a sudden spending a lot of time in Vegas.
Yeah.
And it kind of took a year or two for that to kind of like really shake out. And then it got its rhythm. And now it's just like, it's a part of the landscape. You drive down Sunset Strip here and like there'll be a couple of billboards for some DJs that have some residency or New Year's Eve that's happening or whatever with, you know, whatever cool acts going on at the moment. And it's just part of what it is. You fly into Vegas and like, you know, DJ billboards are up. We're part of the landscape now. I don't think I ever really envisioned that. I was just trying to figure out a shorter path to like economic stability, you know?
Yeah.
um, But it was cool. I think that first day I really was like, okay, this is changing.
If you think about it, you're in the lineage of Elvis and Sinatra and the rapper. I'm serious. And I've talked about it, especially at the beginning. I mean, I will pound the table that Vegas is part of greater Los Angeles because everybody who grew up here or lives here has taken that road trip numerous times.
I am on that train, dude. Yeah. I'm into that wholeheartedly.
And there's so many LA transplants there. But there are eras. There are clearly defined like eras of Las Vegas. And you kicked off like the modern era. And it's like historically when the story is told and you see the side, you know, you see those old signs where it's like Rat Pack at Sahara or whatever it is, you know, at Bally's. And then it's like fucking Cascade and Encore is going to be in that historical, like photojournalistic essay of like how Vegas grew and evolved. So, I mean, like, and that was great. And thank you for those great party moments because I never got to go to like the true raves, you know, and like to really know what they were like. And I'm not saying it's the same, but that was the closest that I got to feel because those parties were fucking nuts.
Dude, the excitement.
And awesome and all night. And again, like to your point about LA nightlife, last call at 1:45, place is shut down at 2. And yes, there's like after parties and we did some warehouse stuff in LA too. But like, it's just on such a different level in Vegas.
It's a different thing.
You really get to let go and go so far into. Oh, it was magical.
But what's interesting about that time, it truly was magical. Dude, I think we're very fortunate. You too. It's different now in Vegas. It's just part of the landscape and it is. And that specialness, listen, there's still fun nights and the clubs are still packing out and it's still crazy.
Yeah.
But I think Vegas kind of mirrored that explosion in interest of electronic music and what a perfect place to do it at. So you were seeing that excitement.
Yeah.
Like, dude, nobody can go back to that moment of 2012 when I played in the Sahara tent and there were like literally 50,000 people trying to get into that tent because we can't make that new again. It's like you can't see Jimi Hendrix for the first time every time, you know? Him playing those things, those great moments when rock and roll interest was like happening. Yeah. Like EDM, that explosion and the interest and all these new venues showing up, like we'll never have that moment again. Yeah. There'll be the next iteation of whatever's coming down the road.
You can't recreate.
But you got to experience that. Yeah. I was really lucky to be there and be a part of that.
I think it happened.
I mean, it was just what a cool, cool time. But like that excitement was going on in a lot of places in North America.
Oh, man.
But of course, Vegas did it bigger and better than anybody.
Of course, the episode. And some may argue now that the aftermath of that, Vegas is sort of kind of looking in the mirror where it's like, all right, what's going to be the next iteration? Because everybody put their chips on the table and went all in on that lifestyle. But to your point, when it's not new and it's not fresh, now you got to start looking at like, what's the next iteration going to be? Because Vegas is having some a little bit of a transition right now. So I'm very curious to see what's next. Listen, I could have this conversation all day because we haven't even scratched the tip of the iceberg, but I want to honor your time. So I want to start concluding a little bit.
Yeah, we can do that. Dude. Yeah. This goes to the 7-hour podcast.
But I appreciate. Okay, what I do want to mention, I want to talk about the Super Bowl, man, just because that's the biggest event on the planet. And you were the first electronic artist to DJ, to perform throughout the Super Bowl. What was that? And you were the one in Vegas, right?
It was
appropriately enough.
I was actually trying to think yesterday, whatever, I was watching the Super Bowl. I'm like, was that 2 years ago? Is it 3 years ago? I'm like, I can't even remember. Anyway.
And but I'm a Raider fan. So you say Bear. We've had a terrible century, by the way. Raiders.
You guys tough.
Now more Rams. Go Rams, LA. But Raiders are my real team. Because I grew up during the Bo Jackson era, Al Davis, commitment to excellence.
Massive. Yeah, I root for the Rams too. A lot of my LA fans are like, are you serious? I'm like, dude, come on, man. I've been a Bears fan for my entire life.
You can't switch.
But I'm like, Bears are out. I wanted Rams to go all the way. Same, dude. I wanted them all the way.
Same.
Because it would have made my Bears argument even better. Like, we lost, but we lost to the champions, you know? Like,
love that, by the way. But so what was that like, man? Like, because, again, it's the biggest event on the planet. Like, after this recent Super Bowl, this subpar, I like Seahawks, but that was not the most entertaining game ever. But the halftime show, Bad Bunny, and we went back and watched like that just the entertainment from previous Super Bowls later that night. Like we were watching the Kendrick one, the awesome. Dr. Dre one, in LA, yeah, all that awesome. Kind of stuff.
Yep.
And really the eyes of the world are on you. So what was that like doing the Super Bowl?
Just another one of those kind of moments in my career where I'm like, is this real? Is this really happening? It was crazy. I mean, the Super Bowl is such a spectacle now. You even see like, you know, footage from like 20 years ago and you're like, yeah, it was big. But now it is like, it's like a global holiday. Like I work with people in Australia and they're like, it's Monday morning, dude. We're all watching the Super Bowl. We can't get anything done. And I'm like, you got, you know, because I'm shooting them a text. Cool. Like, I know it's Monday. Like, yeah. Are you, oh, we're watching the Super Bowl. I mean, it was just cool to be a part of that spectacle. And I'll share this with you that I hired somebody that monitors all the interaction that I get online and they kind of give me a different gauge. And, you know, I employed a PR agent around that and worked with somebody and to do these different, because we're getting all these requests. Once we announced it, it was like, oh, People Magazine wants to talk to you. God. These guys, TMZ wants to talk, you know, all these guys want to talk to you. What are you going to play? What are you going to do? What's happening? And the NFL wants that. They want you to like participate and it's part of the whole circus around the game that happens. But maybe like a week or two afterwards, we look at all the metrics. And during that week leading into in the Super Bowl, whatever, that 10-day period of time before and after the Super Bowl, the amount of impressions on my name, Cascade, DJ Cascade, my music, everything went just through the roof. Like there's no other, like you take every moment of my career and add it all up and times it by 100 and it wouldn't even come close to the amount of interactions with my name just for that one evening of playing music. Wouldn't even come times 100. It doesn't, my entire career added up. That's how many eyeballs and how much people are paying attention to that. So yeah, it's not like anything directly came off of that, you know, but I think it's just part of my story and legacy, and to be a part of that and be invited to do it was just, it was cool. It was an honor. It's like, you know, I love football. Play the Super Bowl. It's like, you don't even have to ask.
I was going to say, as a sports fan and a Bears fan, like that's just cool to have, not on your resume, but like I envision, you know, a bucket list for me is throwing out the first pitch at Dodger Stadium, right? Which would be, thank you if anybody's listening can make that happen. But that would be incredible. But the Super Bowl, like you said, is a completely different. I mean, it's the event. So that's pretty incredible.
It was insane.
Yeah. Okay, bringing it back to LA, here's what I want to know. Well, first, actually, are there any LA songs? Do you have a list of favorite LA songs? Or
you've done this.
I did.
And I learned a lot.
Yeah, did you?
The one that was the most that everyone goes to. What's the guy's... LA, I love it.
I love LA, Randy Newman.
Yeah.
Randy Newman. So that's
a banger.
It is a banger. And that's an eternal classic out here. But like Under the Bridge, famous LA song, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Which I play a lot in my sets. And I'm like, I'm from LA. We sing along to this one. And I get people just go bananas. Doesn't matter where I'm playing in the way. And then somebody will come up and show me their driver's license. I'm from LA. You know, I'm being like, wherever.
Welcome to the Jungle was mine, where you like, and again, even as a hip-hop guy, like I'm a big Guns N' Roses guy. We were, by the way, we're trying to think of who's going to be next year's halftime show because it's going to be here in L.A. And even though they don't match the city, I was like, and I know Guns is over, you know, they're old and Axl may not have the same vocal ability that he did. But I was like, how dope would it be if somehow they work Guns N' Roses into it?
That would be awesome.
But Welcome to the Jungle is about his experience coming to L.A., which I sort of uncovered and I was like, that's so dope because they made it here. Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Welcome to the Jungle is about his experience coming. I want to say he's from like Indiana, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in the Midwest. And when he like got off the, and if you see the video, it's like, I don't want to say autobiographical, but at least inspired by like, you know, you're in the fucking, what's he say? Like, you know where you are. Yeah. You're in the jungle, baby.
Yeah.
Like, that's about
LA.
Now
that you set it up like that, I've already liked that song, but now I like it even more. But dude, Chili Peppers to me are quintessential.
Yeah.
Fairfax. I mean, it's just like, you see them out and about.
Yeah.
Like, they're around.
Stoked.
Like,
stoked.
They're part of LA.
And Flea's like Mr. LA. Flea's a huge LA like cheerleader, which shout out Flea. Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap with this. One of my classic segments is one thing to do in LA this weekend. So Cascade is home. You have no tour, nothing on the agenda for an entire weekend. What are some of your favorite things to do, whether it's ways to relax, places to eat, neighborhoods to explore? What does Cascade want to do in a weekend in LA? Helicopter or not, by the way.
Listen, if I was to have it my way, the perfect day, you'd probably wake up, the surf is firing at sunset in PCH right over there. That's the closest break to my house. Doesn't fire very often. We don't get waves that often there, so I'm always like traveling up the coast or down the coast, but going surfing. Then probably coming back and going with my kids to the pier. Santa Monica Pier is like, it's a cool, listen, it's not about the rides. It's more about just the vibe.
Yeah.
There, that's going on, you know, throwing some balls at some tin cans, knocking them over, getting a stuffed animal, like doing that. My kids have grown up going to that pier.
Yeah.
That's the quintessential kind of West Side LA thing to me is going to the pier.
Yeah. I got to tell you, you mentioned something, and people kind of have this sort of trepidation when they say stuff. Like, I'm always like, you got to see the Hollywood sign, right? And I drove past it for literally thousands of times in my life. And I was like, sure, that's a Hollywood sign. It's neat. One day maybe I'll go up there, but like probably not. But the day we like actually took the hike up there was monumental. And now I'm like,
that's cool.
Where these things, and this is one thing that's awesome about LA, the cliche touristy stuff really is fucking cool. And like, again, Santa Monica Pier, when you're there, you're like, this is awesome. Like, it's a fun experience. Like,
and you drive by it a million times and you're like, I think all touristy spots are kind of like that.
Yeah.
They get overlooked because you're like, well, I live here. I don't need to go do
correct.
That. But it's so awesome when you have a friend in town or something and you're like, no, let's go do this. Let's go hike and go walk up to the sign. You see it and you're like, this is actually really freaking cool. I'm glad. I'm stoked we did it, you know?
Another underrated one is the Walk of Fame, by the way. People love to
Walk of Fame is awesome.
on the Walk of Fame, but I'm like, no, man. Like, listen, I know Hollywood is going through a moment kind of in reverse, although it's picked up a little bit. But when I go, and I'm there a lot, like near Ovation, Hollywood stuff, just covering stuff off, and I'm like, no, this is awesome, man. Like,
it's
you
fun.
See Bob Hope, you see like Snoop Dogg or whoever, you're like, it's freaking cool. See,
listen, that whole little two-block area is just, I mean, it's a zoo, and it's, but dude, you kind of have to embrace it.
Of course.
You park in some crappy parking garage. You walk down there. I've gone with my kids a bunch of times down there just because it's like, it's fun and the Kodak Theater's there and it's crazy. We've seen shows and like the mall's there and you're walking around. These people are dressed up and you're taking pictures. I mean, it's the experience, but it is kind of quintessential LA. You're right there, you know, oh, who's this? Who's that? What's this? You know?
That's cool. Okay. Last question. I want to know, when all is said and done, and you are still going strong, but when all is said and done, what is the legacy of Cascade going to be? How is that story going to be written?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know. I hope what it is exactly what you said earlier. Like, the fact that I've been able to write and produce some songs that people have connected with, that's, like, just my hope. Like, that lives on. Like, that, you know, a few of these songs, like, whatever, I'm done and hung it up, whatever, that some of these songs will live on. And that's cool. Or not even live on. I'm not even talking in like pop culture, just that they were able to connect with people and that it's part of people's story. Like, you know, I always get like, oh man, this album helped me get through grad school. I put this on all the time when I was studying or when I was programming. You know, I met with a programmer. He's like, dude, I program to your music all the time. I'm like, really? Wow, that's cool. You know, I hear all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I think, just having that means more than anything to me.
Man, well, your legacy is secure already and you're still going strong. And I'm incredibly appreciative, but honored that you would come in and join the show. And honestly, thank you for your support of LA in a Minute as well. Like, it really like gives me the chills that somebody of your stature, that's such an LA guy, that my stuff resonates. So I just want to say thank you for that. But more importantly, thank you for everything you've accomplished, what you've done for LA, Vegas, my marriage, like all in between.
Love to hear that, man. Thank you, dude.
Super appreciate
thank you.
It. And I really, really appreciate you coming on the show, man. Oh,
thanks for having me. I love to hear that, dude.
All right, LA. This is Cascade. It's been a minute.
Get sweet deals at True North convenience stores when you join True Rewards. Save a dollar when you buy any two king or standard size candy bars. Get more Kit Kat Crunch, Milky Way Caramel, and more peanut M&Ms. Choose any of your chocolate favorites when you grab two king or standard size candy bars and save $1. Become a True Rewards member today and save on so much more. Download from the Apple app or Google Play Store for more details. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.